Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello, everybody. I'm Darren Parkinson, and I'm here with my esteemed co-host,
Adam Wozniak. How you doing, Darren?
I'm doing great, and we are Biz Radio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business. How are you doing today, Adam?
Oh, I'm doing well. Doing well. Excited to be on today.
Yeah. How's your week been?
Oh, it's been great, man. It's been warm.
Warm? Yeah. I stepped out yesterday for the first time, and every day is a mystery with the Georgia weather, you know. Stepped outside, and it was a great day for a change, and yeah, I'm just excited for, we can't really honestly complain about having a bad, you know, winter. Like, I think I can maybe count on one hand how many days were memorably cold, but we can't really complain.
Oh, for
so
sure.
I guess sure. One of the positive things of, you know, global warming, I guess. but other than that, how's school been going for you?
Oh, it's going great, man. Just, I'm counting down the days till May.
Counting down. What's so special about May?
Light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm hit the ground running hard at the beginning of the semester, and now, yeah, everything's full turn, being school. But we have a very exciting guest today. And I'm just excited to introduce Jeff Wan of Dynamex. How are you?
Thanks so much for having me. I'm doing great.
Okay. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm a six-time founder, co-founder. I started my first real business in 2005 as a sophomore at Berry College. Cool. And been going ever since.
Okay. Can you please elaborate on that? Because that doesn't sound like the typical life plan of most college students.
Yeah. So at the time, I had grand ambitions of an alarm system for my car and didn't have any money because college students don't have money. Mm-hmm. And so I taught myself how to build a website, I like to say I'm a recovering introvert. And so it was easier to decide what to do and to spend 3 months building it than it was to go talk to someone. And mm-hmm. so I procrastinated by teaching my sites and built a site for a local company, and then drove an hour out there and just showed up and explained to them that their website wasn't very good. And I had built a new one and asked if I could have an alarm system, and kind of started from there.
Wow. And how did they take that? I mean, someone coming up saying, you know, this is something, I appreciate what you did, but you could be doing better. Here it is. How did they take that?
Well, the funny thing was, this was 2005, so there was no such thing as an iPad. And my laptop was 17 inches, and it was basically like a tray. It was mm-hmm. huge, probably weighed 15 pounds. And so I didn't bring that either.
Yeah.
I printed out the old website, and I printed out the new one, and just walked in a dress shirt and just walked up to the lady at the counter and just started talking. And, I think she was just a little confused for a while. Like, who is this guy and why is he pitching me randomly mm-hmm. a website? I felt like maybe I was getting into a bit of a rhythm. And then a sales guy walked by and said, "Dude, what's wrong with your face?" And apparently I had gotten so nervous that I had gotten red and splotchy. And it was all over my neck and my face. And I was very uncomfortable. And so I thought very hard about running. I thought the door wasn't that far away and I could get out, and they didn't know who I was yet. But I decided that I would have lost 3 months of hard work and I would have the same problem the next time I went and tried to talk to someone. And so I just stayed with it, and that probably helped the sale a little bit now that I think about it. But he went on about how I must have had an allergic reaction because I was all splotchy, and asked me what I had for lunch. And I told him a burger from Ted's. So that must be it. You must be allergic to burgers. Said, yeah, okay, I guess, whatever. And so the lady said, people come in here every week and try to sell us a website. You're the first person who's ever come in with something done. And it was better than what they had. And so it was easy for them to say yes to.
That's incredible. And I got to ask, it sounds like you just kind of stumbled on website design. What exactly were you doing before that?
I was just a college student. I mean, I started technically my first quote unquote business when I was 14.
Oh, wow.
And that was setting up networks and building computers and mm-hmm. infrastructure for small businesses. And that's about the most embarrassing thing you can do in the late 90s, because there were no cell phones. Mm-hmm. And so, hey, this is Jim from State Farm calling Jeff's parents' house asking for Jeff. You know, my mom picks up the phone, says, hey, Jeff, State Farm's on the phone. And I go, oh, great. And so I pick it up. Hi. Yep. I know you talked to my mom. Yeah, sure. I can set up that network. What time can you pick me up?
Mm-hmm.
And so they had to come to my parents' house and pick me up to drive me around to do the work. And so I did that for about a year before it was just too embarrassing. And then I jumped on to working IT at my high school, which is Mount Perrin Christian School. Mm-hmm. Did that for a while. And then, in college, the reason I did websites was because that was the thing that I felt like I could contribute mm-hmm. as a college student. You know, it was the only thing that I saw that they really needed. It was 2005. Everyone's site was bad. And I figured in a few months of learning, I could figure out how to do something better for them.
Wow. So, I mean, obviously, you obviously did a little bit of research, what can I do? What can I bootstrap in a sense to, because obviously it'd call like, you know, at that age in college, coming up with, you know, enough money to do something like that. And it's just brilliant to see that you found another way of just leveraging your skills and talents. And so why was it the website? What stood out about that? Why did you think that was where you wanted to go with it?
Well, I knew I couldn't help them with a radio campaign or anything. Yeah. I didn't have enough experience for any of that. I knew that they probably didn't have much of a need for someone who could build computers for them.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the thing that I felt like I could contribute that would be valuable enough, but not too much of a burden to go after. And so... Yeah. You know, that's one of the things that I spend a lot of time now at high schools and colleges talking to people about entrepreneurship. And the biggest thing that I hear consistently from kids is, yeah, you know, that might have been good for you, but you need money in order to start a company. Mm-hmm. And it always bothers me because it's so untrue. And you can't get your break until you go out there and put yourself out and do something.
Mm-hmm.
And so... Let's say you like volleyball.
Yeah.
So you go buy a volleyball from a company that makes the equipment that you use, and you figure out what you can do to get them some exposure. You make a viral video or something. Mm-hmm. Costs you nothing. Takes 10 hours of planning and execution, and then you get 10,000 views for it, and then you send a tweet to the head of social media for that company or LinkedIn mm-hmm. or something, and you say, hey, I'm a college student. I put this together. I'm a high schooler. I put this together. I love volleyball. Would love to have a conversation with you. And all of a sudden, you've opened a door. But mm-hmm. you can't do it just by wishing that someone would give you an opportunity.
Exactly. And I mean, that's something I resonate so much. And that kind of resonates around like the mission that we're trying to do here at Biz Radio U. And it's just to share your stories and just see how you got out there and did something like that and where it took you. And all it takes is literally just getting up there and doing something. Because the hardest part about starting a business or starting anything live is actually starting it.
Absolutely.
And I feel like, yeah, because it's a problem that's plagued our, this generation, just pretty much all generations. That's the thing of learned helplessness. And people have just, in a sense, learned to be helpless. My example for that would be, like, take circus elephants. What they would do when they were young, they would tie like a rope around their leg, tie it to a post. And when they're young, they couldn't break it because, you know, they didn't have the strength or anything like that. When they grew to full adults, obviously, like they used the same method, but the elephant wouldn't break the rope. The elephant wouldn't go. And why? It could easily snap it. Like, it's not a problem. I've seen them push down trees. It's picked up a vehicle I've been in. They don't do it. And that's because they've learned to be helpless. And that's the problem, is people have learned to be helpless. So part of, you know, the mission here, and I can resonate with you, part of your mission too, and part of the reason you're here is to just show people it's not that hard. It's just getting out there.
I think a big part of it comes down to well-meaning parents mm-hmm. and well-meaning teachers who say, oh, you don't want to take that risk. You know, find a good, solid job. Stay with that. You know, you'll be great. You can do that forever. You don't want to risk failing and it takes a lot of money. You know, they plant these things, not meaning to mm-hmm. to demean or demoralize the kid, but out of their own fear, they project that onto the kid. And then the kid goes, gosh, I can't do anything like that. It's too much of a risk. And I mean, I think back, if someone had given me $100,000 to go jump into my business, that would have been gone, mm-hmm. and I probably would have gone out of business because I didn't know how to spend the money.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, sorry, go ahead.
Until you have those lessons under your belt, you really shouldn't have any money, you know? You need to learn how to avoid losing what you don't have, you know, really take your time and get those lessons out of the way when they don't matter.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can start to springboard off of that. And that's why I love high school and college entrepreneurship. You have literally nothing mm-hmm. to lose.
Exactly.
Your bills are pretty much paid for. You don't have any real expectations around you except, you know, go to class and do your thing. And you've got an amazing support structure around you and the teachers and professors who are willing and excited to be able to help you.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll carry out past graduation as well.
Yeah, that's why I'm utilizing all the opportunities I have in college. I mean, I can't stress that enough, that it's not just about that degree. It's about the opportunities that are there and how you utilize them. And that's what I've started doing. And it's opened up the doors to just many possibilities. And yeah, it's just, I mean, it's kind of funny that you say that, because there's an inverse correlation with the amount of capital raised in the beginning to start a company and their success. Because the problem is, when you have limited resource, and that's one of the true marks of an entrepreneur, is to start a business with limited resources and just make things happen.
Yep.
And the problem is, when you have money, you don't focus on the efficiency or streamlining the process, and the money can hold you back. So that's what causes, I guess, that inverse correlation. And it's just, yeah, it's really, yeah. And yeah, so I mean, it's absolutely fascinating, incredible story. I love like how this all started. But once you went from there, when did you know that this could be the business you wanted to tackle?
So my second site was for a collaboration between Dub Magazine, mm-hmm. which was a big deal back then, yeah. and Audiobon, which doesn't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. And that was a fun one because I love cars, and I got to you know, go through that whole process. And then I was done with that, and I was like, okay, you know, I could probably turn this into a real thing, and started to have other people reach out to me and say, hey, I like the work that you did here. And so, you know, I just sort of kept going with it because it was fun for me. And then by senior year of college, I had a full-time person mm-hmm. and 18 hours of classes, and got kicked out of my house by my roommate because he got engaged and said, you know, hey, I want you out. And I said, she's already been living here, but okay. mm-hmm. So I had a 2-hour daily commute added onto that, and you know, just kind of back against the wall and talking about money. I hired my first full-time person and bought a house the same weekend, and I had $2,500 in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had no margin and no room to do anything but work hard and succeed. I don't quite recommend being that far over, yeah. and it wasn't something that I intended to do, but it just sort of fell that way. I had to make those decisions at the same time. And so I got, you know, a few hours of sleep a night for that entire semester.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I credit my professors for the fact that I even bothered to graduate. I had to go to each one of them and say, I think this is great, but I'm running a company and I have to pay the bills and I live far away. I'm taking a lot of classes. My phone's going to be on silent, but when it rings, I'll get up and answer it. I might not come back into class. I'm going to miss class for being in meetings.
Mm-hmm.
I might miss tests.
Yeah.
But know that I'm putting your theory into practice. Mm-hmm. So you can decide to pass or fail me, but I'm not going to change my behavior based on this class. Tell me if this is a problem and I'll find a different class to be in. And, you know, I just had a champion professor who really helped make mm-hmm. that resonate with my other professors and say, leave this kid alone, because he might not look like he's paying attention with his laptop out during class. But think about, after that class ends, he's going to walk up to you and go, you know, what you said earlier really resonated with me. And I've already gone in and made this rough mock-up for this client of mine.
Mm-hmm.
Is this kind of what you had in mind? Is this the correct implementation of that concept that you brought to bear?
Yeah.
And so thankfully, they were understanding enough at a time where entrepreneurship wasn't as big of a thing. I mean, it's come so far in the past 10, 12, 15 years. But thankfully, they allowed me to be sort of a non-traditional student mm-hmm. and to be able to succeed that way.
Wow. Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. And just, so, I mean, it's a very competitive field, and starting off like that with the limited time you had and everything, what have you done differently? What have you differentiated yourself amongst all the competition? What have you done different?
Well, it's a great question. So I denied this to myself for a long time. One of my mentors, maybe 2 years ago, said, Jeff, you know, you're really not a website development company. And I was like, what are you talking about? Of course we are. Mm-hmm. And he said, no, you're really a software company whose output is websites. And I was kind of in denial about that for a little while. And I thought about it. And I was like, no, you know what? He's right. Because what we do differently from everybody else is everyone and their cousin grabs WordPress or Joomla or Drupal or some .NET CMS, and they just jump in and they implement other people's code. And they try to see how quickly they can knock something out to make it as profitable as possible. Mm. And they don't take responsibility for the code because they don't understand the underlying code. They didn't create any of it. They're good at implementing some plugins and making some tweaks to stuff that exists. But as soon as you get past that, they aren't able to perform. And we've started our business from day one on the idea of let's forget the technology. The technology is how we get to the end destination. But let's start with a blue sky. How do we make something amazing? And then the technology will flow from that. And so it's a blank slate every time we build something out versus how do we take this template and adapt it to this particular thing? And so, you know, I think that's how we ended up being one of the world's most awarded website developers for the past couple of years, is because of that focus on doing things differently from everybody else. A brochure site can be thrown up in three days for very little money and it's going to look like everybody else. When we build something, it has to resonate with that audience. So they go to 10 of those brochure sites and they come to this site. They go, wow, these are my guys. I feel comfortable with them. They're answering the right questions as I'm, you know, thinking them in my head. And I resonate with what their message is.
Yeah. So,
I'll say that's great that you're able to get everyone on the same page. You know, that's a big deal there.
Well, I think the big part for us has been that we don't do very much. You know, a lot of companies in our space like to be everything to everyone. So they do SEO, they do pay-per-click, they do content writing, they do social media management, they do website development, they are everything to everyone. And they're not very good at any of them. Or they might be great at two or three, and they spend a lot of their time on the stuff they're not great at. And those things are what cause a bad customer experience. And so we kind of learned early on that we didn't enjoy doing a lot of those other things. And there are a million people out there who do them. And that we wanted to be hyper-focused on just doing one thing, which is building incredible user experiences and websites for people that resonate.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest catches with a great user interface is the only time that you should notice it is when there's a problem. If you don't notice anything, you know, you've done your job. So that's a tough thing. So I mean, obviously people don't see all the little work and all the extra things you do behind the scenes. So they can't truly appreciate it. How do you get that? If that's the competitive advantage, how do you get that out there? How do people see that?
You know, I think it's helpful that we have such high market penetration in Atlanta in particular. You know, most people who advertise in some form or fashion, we have as a client. And so a lot of times we'll get a call from someone who goes, okay, so I was on Reliable Heating and Air's site and I thought this was a really cool site. And I called them and I ordered something from them. And then a week later, I went to Zero Res and I got my carpets cleaned. And I said, this is a really cool looking website. And then I realized that you made both of them. And then I came across this other website that you did. And so now I'm calling you because I need the same thing for my business, because the ones that stood out to me were developed by you.
Yeah.
And so we have a lot of that type of thing. And we also have a lot of very, very, you know, satisfied customers that that are generous enough to recommend us to other people. And, you know, the other side is we really, you know, there's a million types of customers out there, and we really try to serve just a handful that are going to be right for the things that we do. So if someone comes to us and they say, I've already got a design, or I've got a designer I need you to implement, or I already know exactly how this thing's going to be, you know, we don't take those projects on, because then we won't be able to be creative enough to do the things that they want. And every single time we've run into that, their idea of what's cutting edge is 3 or 4 years old. And even when they've got a marketing agency in there and they're putting stuff together, that's that one guy's one job and he's doing it for 26 companies. And so they can't possibly be as far ahead. And so we turned down, you know, I say 75%, but I think the last time I looked at it was higher than that of people who actually come to us and want a website, because unless we really get excited about it and say, this is a project that we're proud to put our name behind. And we love the team and they have great reviews and they're a solid company. We won't work with them. You know, life's too short to do work you're not proud of.
Yeah.
And life is way too short to advance someone else's bad company. And so I don't care if someone comes to us with $1 million check. If they have poor reviews and people don't enjoy working with them, we can't take that project on because that's our name on their website as well.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I love the emphasis on the user experience and user interface because I saw a video like a couple months ago that really changed my perspective on it a lot. And it was, I think the title of it was Smart People, Dumb Doors. And basically what it was is how many times have you, I think we've all done this where we walk up to a door and it's a push door, but we grab the handle and we pull it, or there's a handle that we're supposed to push and we walk into the door and we all have that moment where we're just like, oh, I feel like an idiot. There's people standing by. And we all have that moment at some points. But I just want to like let people know it's not your fault. It's the door's fault and the door designer. Because if you think about it, like I mentioned before, there's only a problem when you realize that there is a problem. It should be seamless and you shouldn't even realize it. The thing is, the door handle, if you're opening a door and it opens outward, the handle should say, hey, this is something you push and this is something that you open. It shouldn't be a handle grab. And the same thing on the other side of the door where it's something you should pull, not, you know, push. So with a great user experience, that's what it's about. It's about seamlessly and not even having to think about things and just intuitively just, it's just there and just makes sense.
Well, you think about someone like Nest and the alarm system. I mean, the smoke detector.
Yes.
You know, the smoke detector has been basically the same for 50 years. And it's a terrible experience because think about when that thing starts to beep. It only ever starts beeping right in the middle of the night. And it starts beeping loudly and repeatedly in the middle of the night. Oh, and so what do? It's 2 a.m. You're half asleep. You wake up, you're aggravated, and you go over there and you pull the battery out of it and you put it on the floor and you say, stupid thing, you curse, you go back to bed again. So now you don't have a smoke detector and you may or may not remember to put the thing back in again because it hit you at the wrong time. And you look at something like the Nest, just a simple modern tweak to it, and it'll notify you via an app long in advance of this thing needing to be replaced, and it will speak to you when you walk by, and you just don't have that nonsensical, I don't care about the customer, I'm just going to complain when I complain thing. And if you think about it, you could have easily adjusted for that and accounted for that by putting a little bit of a filter before this thing, just a 20-cent light sensor that when it starts to reach a certain battery point on the traditional smoke alarm, would make sure that it's light in that room so that there's someone, it's probably daylight or the lights are on, someone's awake. And it does that for the first 5% of its, you know, low life that is added on. And then after that, it can beep continuously. But then it makes sure that at least it's likely to go off when you're awake versus going off some other time.
Yeah.
And so many people just don't really think about the user experience, especially when they're in an area that they feel protected and that, you know, how much competition is there for smoke detectors? And then all of a sudden a Nest comes along and they realize, wow, we're way behind the curve and our business is being decimated.
Wow. So, I mean, yeah, it's all about, I guess, like you said, it's just being intuitive and just seeing something, you know, like a problem at hand, because if you have that problem, everybody typically has that same problem. I mean, I think that's the one of the cornerstones of the company Vine is like they do little videos of things that we deal with every single day. Someone will post a video about that and we can just resonate with that because we're like, I deal with that problem too every single day. I know I can feel that. So it's just cool when people see that and can solve that problem and like create a company around it. That's if you can solve a problem and you know you can make a company around it. It's great.
Absolutely.
And essentially that's what you did. You saw a problem that they had, you came up with a solution and it started from there. It's incredible.
Yeah. Now, Jeff, we've talked a lot about early success. Now, what was maybe one of your first like setbacks or major obstacle that you had to overcome?
Biggest obstacle was being in college, running a company, and the fact that there are a lot of not great people out there. And when you're just starting out and you're shy and you're just trying to figure things out, there are a lot of great people that you'll come across who say, you know, I'm going to give this kid a chance. And sure, I could get a company to do this for me, but this guy is going out on a limb and he's going to do a good job. Then there's also the other guys, the side that says, I can take advantage of this kid because he doesn't have the experience or the bandwidth or the understanding to know better beforehand. So we had a guy once while I was still in college, he called me up. We were in the middle of building his website. This was a $2,850 website. And we were putting all sorts of time into it. And he said, hey, you told me that you were going to build me a second site for free. And I said, no, we didn't talk about that. And it's not in the proposal. It's not in the contract. And he said, well, see, the way that I see it, you're a college student and you don't have much money and I can sue you. And so you get to make the decision. Would you rather build me a second site for free or would you rather me sue you out of business?
Wow.
And so we made the second site and that's what set me on the path of saying no to most people. You know, if I have a flag on someone, I'm not going to do business with them. And those flags have been honed from those types of negative experiences, you know, learning how to avoid those things. Because he was a quirky personality going in, but we needed the business. And I was just the eternal optimist. And I said, oh, we'll figure it out. He'll be fine. And so that was a big early lesson.
Yeah. That's something that I've learned with the Entrepreneurship Center at KSU. Because I kind of went in there first with the stigma that, you know, like everyone's out there to steal your ideas. Everyone's like, if you have a good idea, be quiet about it. Don't talk about it because someone wants to like, you know, like steal it and take it away. But the cool thing about I realized with entrepreneurship is ideas are cheap and implementation. That is what
execution's all that matters.
That is what resonates with me. And one of the great things also about the Entrepreneurship Center is the people that surrounds it, the people that are there, I mean, they're like, that's the one thing about being an entrepreneur. You're going to be more busy than anything else that you ever do, but you love what you do.
Yep.
And these successful people take the time out of their day to come and talk around. I mean, that's how we met. I mean, through the rapid networking event. And you take time out of your day to do things like that. And it's just great because it kind of changed my perspective on just entrepreneurship in general. And there's this warmness and this like it just resonates. And I think at the end of the thing, I even stood up and said, like, the one thing that resonates with me the most is just seeing how happy everybody is and that they just want to help. And it's just that community within the entrepreneurship thing that is huge. I mean, and that's also a big part of like Biz Radio U is getting that message out there and creating, you know, just that positive message around it, because it's the small businesses and those people, you know, that help push the country forward, because those are the ones that create jobs. Those are the ones, you know, that are seeing the world in a different way, that are solving problems and making, you know, everyday life just easier to live and just, you know, helping people out. And that's something that resonates with me so much with that. And that's why I love to be a part of it. And I'm just really glad we met.
Oh, I appreciate it. Absolutely. And I think that, going back to the execution side, you know, anyone who's looking to get a mentor or to meet people, as soon as you can show that you've executed, you're really in as a college student in particular. You know, people want to help someone who is starting something early and really working on it. And I think the mistake I see a lot of high school and college kids making is you're going to call up Nike and say, hey, Nike, I need some business, or I need an idea for this, or I would love for you to give me some handouts, instead of going to Nike and saying, Nike, I just got this video 100,000 views and I would love to have a conversation with you about being part of your social media team or doing an internship or doing this or doing that. You know, execute first, then have a conversation, and the world just works so much better.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and also it just comes down to just getting out of your comfort zone and just trying things. Like, if there's something you think you like, just get out there and try it and see where it goes. I mean, it's as simple as that. I mean, you, like you said, you just started, you know, like got out there, wanted to design a website. So you got out there, learned how to do it. You just said you didn't know how to do it before that.
Nope.
You taught yourself and you went out there and did that. And you just essentially, I mean, you saw an opportunity, you provided value for somebody, and that's what it's about.
Absolutely.
And yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's an amazing story. And yeah, so just to wrap things up, our last question. If there was one thing that you know now that you wish you knew when you were starting out, what would that be?
I think I've always had a very strong sense of responsibility and sense that I'm a little behind. So growing up, my dad owned a company and he always told me my dream is to be master of my own time. And that informs everything that I do. And so he was at every karate thing. He was at every soccer game. He was always there, all in, really relaxed and focusing on me. And 4 and 5 year old Jeff took a weird message out of that. I'm sitting there in Delaware as a little kid going, I've got to start a company and become successful enough that I can do this for my kids. Really weird lesson for a little kid to get in his head. But ever since that time, I always felt like I was behind, mm-hmm. you know. Sophomore year, I was in a senior dorm. Junior year, I had a house. Senior year, I had a bigger house. I've always been push, 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 push. And I think I lost a little bit of my last 2 years in college by pushing a little bit too hard and not seeking a balance. And it took me a decade to find that balance properly. Mm-hmm. And so I would tell younger Jeff to focus on creating a strong balance so that you can be effective and not just busy.
Mm-hmm. That is huge. And that's something that resonates so much with me, man. It's because one of the things that started me out on this journey that I'm on, my entrepreneurial journey, was actually like my father told me a very similar thing. He told me I need to be the maker of my own destiny and I need to be the one in control. And because my dad is an absolutely brilliant man and he's done great things for the companies he's worked for. And what he's done for them versus what they've compensated for that just does not correlate at all. And it breaks my heart. And, you know, just the one big problem, you know, in today's society is job security. It's not the same as it once was.
Yep.
But, you know, when you get out there and you do something and you're the boss, I mean, it's special. It's something you can't describe. It's something that just makes you want to get up in the morning. And that's something that drives me a lot. So. Yeah.
And the other side is you'll never meet someone, you know, who's retired or on their deathbed who says, man, I wish I worked more.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to get in your head why you're actually doing what you're doing or you won't be able to weather anything. And it can't be money because as soon as something gets a little tough, you're going to quit and you're going to call it a day. It has to go way beyond that. And it has to be something that that you're not just going to achieve and feel hollow. You know, I can't make it $1 million bucks in the bank account, or you're going to hit that and then you're not going to know what to do with yourself.
Because and you're right. And what you're describing, it's about finding purpose. And when you pursue that purpose, that's what creates value for you and for others. And that's where happiness comes from. So it's beautiful. I love seeing it in action right here. And So thank you so much for coming on the show. And if our listeners want to contact you, what would be the best way to do that?
Twitter is Jeffrey, J-A-H-N, Jeffrey Yon. You can just type in Dynamics, D-Y-N-A-M-I-X, in Google and pull up our website. And those are probably, or LinkedIn.
Okay, perfect. And like I said, thanks again so much for coming on the show. And
thanks for having me.
Thank you. I'm Darren Parkinson.
And I'm Adam Wozniak.
And we're Biz Radio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.